Megan Krakauer and Jerry Georgiatis from the National Suicide Prevention and Trauma Recovery Project. Welcome to Noongar Radio, you two.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks,
no worries. Mark. Excellent. Okay, the National Suicide Prevention and Trauma Recovery Project. Okay, let's hear all about that, Megan, Jerry. Who's up?
You go about the Trauma Recovery Project.
So the National Suicide Prevention and Trauma Recovery Project, it's a non-funded service. Basically, we operate on a voluntary basis. But over the last couple of years, we've worked with 20,000 people right across the, not only in Western Australia, but very much across the nation. We're working with the most marginalised and vulnerable, and we're providing that hope. What we do is we work with people who aren't above the poverty line. So right in Western Australia, we have 60% of our brothers and sisters falling below the poverty line. Incarceration, deaths in custody, child removals, homelessness, a range of issues that we work with people. It's in reach, it's outreach, it's going to people's homes. It's about working with individuals, families, unpacking issues, providing that intense psychosocial support, assertive outreach 24/7. So it's very common for us to work 80, 90, 100 hour week.
Yeah. And you guys have launched a class action lawsuit against the WA government over the imprisonment of people with unpaid fines. Tell us about that, Jerry.
Well, it's the fourth class action that we've launched. In recent years, we've launched, or I've launched, 17 individuated actions, legal actions. For instance, with Denisha Woods, a child that was electrocuted in public housing, we sued the government to get them in the next crusher payment in advance, the only thing that could hold them together of $1 million public trustee. For Miss Dew, for Elijah Doherty, and the list goes on for First Nations, non-First Nations and migrant-born. There's also others that, you know, we represent. 70% of our people that we represent or support at the National Suicide Prevention and Trauma Recovery Project are First Nations, as it happens, but 30% are non-First Nations, and a lot of migrant-born people all below the poverty line. With the class action, this is the fourth one. The first class action that we've launched is actually the one that everybody knows about, the Banksia Hill one, where we've taken on the state government, have 500 plaintiffs so far.
Yep.
We want to see change. We want to see an abolition of the prison. That's a child's prison, and we want to see support, nurture children. We've got primary school children sitting in the jail. Think about that. It's primary school children sitting in a jail, sitting in jails. The second class action that we launched was the an end to black deaths in custody in Western Australia. So that's another firm taking that on. And what we want to do is a lot of the reforms that I've been waiting for 3 decades to happen that just haven't happened. And that's intertwined with the other class action that I'll be talking about in a minute. The third class action is we've taken on the Commonwealth on deportations, deporting people out of this country on bad character presumption. They serve a sentence and then they get deported. Mm. That's just not on. Clean slate. And people, and this affects First Nations, non-First Nations, and most of the people that we're supporting. And I've supported quite a few First Nations people to staying in the country. Everybody knows the Daniel Love case, but there's a lot of brothers and sisters, Maori, New Zealanders, Filipinos. Why I mentioned Filipinos, I just represented someone in the tribunal and won that case for them and cancelled the visa revocation, whatever, right? So that he's staying, he's with his family and all that. But the most recent class action lodged in the courts the Monday preceding by Levitt and Robinson lawyer, Stuart Levitt, the Palm Island lawyer, is an action on behalf of the legacy of the tragedy of Miss Dew, who lost her life in part because of the unpaid fines drama when there was a call out of distress call to support her and said she was locked up. 3 days later, on August 4, 2014, she was dead.
Yeah.
And that tragedy should never have happened. Had there been a custody notification service at the time, which I helped bring about in Western Australia, and had there been no jailing of fine defaulters who are impoverished, she would be with us today. That's my stoic belief. So what we're doing now, simply put it, everyone that's been imprisoned, First Nations and non-First Nations, and we've got a disproportionate impact. More than half of those imprisoned for fine defaults are First Nations.
Right.
So we've had about 10,000 people imprisoned in the last 10 years.
This fine defaulting thing, wasn't that amended or something?
That was amended early last year. The real story between the fine defaulting campaign was that in 2008 it became aware to me that people were being jailed exclusively for fine defaults. At that time when I raised the issue, no one wanted to believe it. Everybody said there must be something else alongside that.
Yeah.
And actually, I raised it with government at the time, and the government, actually oblivious to themselves, didn't realise what was happening with the Department of Justice, Corrective Services and the Fines Enforcement Registry. It took me from till 2013 to convince the system itself, the very system itself, that its own system was jailing people for fine defaults, a civil matter, and criminalising them to pay them down for no other reason than that. What had happened was between 2008 to 2013, 1,100 people had been jailed for fine defaults.
Right. But when did the actually get
the campaign
amended?
Began in 2013.
Right.
I got motions put at the Labor conference in 2015 to establish a custody notification service and amend the Fines Enforcement Act to remove the powers from the Fines Enforcement Registrar to willy-nilly dish out a civil servant to willy-nilly dish out warrants to police instead of a court doing that.
Yeah.
So that began to reduce the number of stuff. The number of warrants being handed out, but the campaign was a slow burn.
Right.
Even though the government got in 2016 or 17, what they promised in opposition at the state conference still took years to get across. We had to fight tooth and nail to get it across the line. It was actually early last year that the amendments finally happened. Early last year.
So has anybody been incarcerated for fines since that legislation was actually changed early last
year? So the powers have been removed from the Fines Enforcement Registrar. So the Fines Enforcement Registrar does not have the power to actually issue warrants, so they the high volume that actually happened. So it's been dramatically reduced. A court can still jail someone.
Yeah, that's
for
a court. That's a different thing.
So the numbers have been dramatically reduced, but some people, and they're now mostly non-First Nations, are still incarcerated for fines. So that's something that needs to be amended. But so the class action is about compensating redress to the thousands, more than 10,000 people, more than half First Nations, who have been incarcerated for fines alone.
Gee, it's actually ridiculous when you think about how many people are actually in jail for this fines thing, and you count all those people up, and how much does it cost to keep someone in jail? Wouldn't the government actually be saving money
hundreds
by not
having... hundreds of thousands per person. They'd be saving money, the social return would benefit, we'd have a lower prison population, the money would be dramatic saved in forward estimates. But... let me just argue this one last point. People also have still retained the predicament of these costly fines.
Yeah.
So at one stage, I'd like to also mention one thing that you said, because the number of people. At one stage, the prison population was 1 in 5 people incarcerated for fines. It was actually 18%. It peaked at 18% of the prison population of WA, which is now 7,000 total. About 2,000 almost were in there for fines alone. But 1 in 5. We reduced it slowly over the years with the cultural shift, and then we've dramatically reduced it with the amendments to the Act.
But still, there'd be, what, 1 in 10 now?
It'd be 1 in 50 now.
So
that's 1 in 50 too many.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's 1 in 50 too many. But the other thing is, we've got brothers and sisters who live that far below the poverty line.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy.
In crushing poverty.
Yeah.
Who cop a fine for $1,000. They're on $300-$500 a week. They're never going to be able to resolve that payment. So then it builds up and accumulates and becomes 20, 30, 40, 50,000 with court-ordered costs, breaches of late payments and all that, or non-payment. And what we need actually... It was actually recommendation 120 from the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody, and recommendation 121 that asked effectively for the wavering of all fines that are more than 5 years of age.
Right.
That they had and we have not actually implemented 120 and 121. And for this is First Nations dedicated, but I think it should be all West Australians. 60% of brothers and sisters First Nations in West Australia live below the poverty line. 14% of West Australians live below the poverty line. We've got to take into account poverty.
Yeah.
And the second part of this campaign that we've begun now, I couldn't do it at the same time because it would conflate the issue and governments wouldn't have been supportive of. And we've met with the Attorney Generals and the like. But the second part of the campaign is now, and which has begun, and I wrote an article in The West just recent, is income-assessed-sized fines.
Yeah, I remember reading that. And I thought that was a brilliant idea. Yeah, well, a $200 fine doesn't affect somebody who's earning $100,000 a year, but it certainly affects somebody who's is living below the poverty line.
Exactly, Mark.
It's just nuts.
We've got to make fines fair and affordable. We're not talking about taking away the punitive value. We're saying it'd still be there, but it's got to be fair and it's got to be universal. It's got to be affordable, as it is for someone on $100,000.
Yep.
It should be on someone on $20,000.
Exactly.
A year.